also have WS2N as WB2EAB.
WB2EAB, go ahead, Ed.
I've been thinking, if you feel like I stepped on your toes during Andy's talk, if so, I apologize. It was certainly not intentional.
Oh, very good. No, no problem. I'm usually the first one to key up on somebody, especially with these the repeaters. Years ago, there used to be a 2-second delay between this repeater and Glen Oaks. When I say this one, I'm on Selden right now. And boy, I don't know if you remember that. That used to drive people crazy. Everybody keying up on top of one another. Back to you, Ed.
I understand, yes. But no, I meant emotionally. You said something and I tried to clarify, but thinking about it, it might have come off as putting you down. I do not want you to feel that was intentional if it came off that way.
Oh, okay. No, no, it didn't. No, not at all. No, I get it. Not a problem. Very good. Yeah, and I relate everything to fluids and steam and all of that. So I was in that industry as a steam fitter. So I'm retired now, but I don't know. I've got so many analogies with electronics dealing with fluids. You know, in my head, that's the easiest way to understand it. But then again, if you don't understand the fluids, then it might not help you. Back to you, Ed.
Okay, excellent. Well, I do have a very silly comment. You say you were a steam fitter. That only brings up a question. How do you fit steam? How do you fit gases together? I assume the term is really short for something like steam piping fitter.
So, that's it. Throughout the rest of the country, most places it's a pipe fitter. But we just have an official different name here. And some of the other cities as well, Chicago, San Francisco, you know, and they still use the word steam fitter. We started that name, everything started in 1914 for us here in the New York area.
And what did they do from like 1807 when they first started coming out with steam engines? Actually, before that, in 1914, what did they call them?
Oh, no, they would call them that, but the organization officially started that. I would imagine Pipefitter name actually came up later. Steam fitter was first. Well, they had Boilermakers, right? And, they were a spinoff of they developed the engines for locomotives. So everything, I guess, spun off from that. You know, the guy, I would imagine the first steam industry would have had to do with locomotives. And then after that, you have Boilermakers that would, you know, they might spot you make tanks big enough to breathe steam. And there you go. So now we have countless locals throughout the United States and Canada. Collectively, it's called the United Association. Back to you, Ed.
Okay, that answered any questions I had there. Different subject. In 1974, I pretty much spent the entire year commuting back and forth between this area and Wallops Island. Not the launching base on the island, but the nearby airport they used to support it. And one thing I noticed, I've been to Cape Canaveral, and I've been to the area of Wallops Island, and it's like the sublime to the ridiculous. Cape Canaveral is like a tourist attraction that's nowhere near on the scale of Disney World, kind of is, you know, in the same magnitude of popularity. Whereas Wallops Island, like, if you're not actually on the payroll there, no one ever goes there.
imagine that's true. Wallops Island was around, probably around the same time they used to have sounding flights. They still do. You know, in other words, suborbital flights. Probably in the 1940s. So that place evolved, but it never became Cape Canaveral, and then eventually you have Cape Canaveral now and Cape Kennedy, or, you know, Kennedy Space Center. They're actually two separate places, Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center. But Wallops Island, yeah. And right now you just have, now you have Northrop Grumman. Before, a couple of years ago, it was called Orbital Science. Orbital Science became Orbital ATK. Everybody kept buying up Orbital. And now it's Northrop. Anyway, they're still launching the same name rocket called the Antares rocket. And on top of that is the Cygnus spacecraft going up to the space station. So, yeah, I would imagine if you have nothing to do with that, you have no reason to be going there. And now they have another rocket company called Rocket Lab that just started there. And they were supposed to have their first launch go up by now, but I guess COVID-19 must have slowed them down. But probably in a couple of months you'll see a launch from there. So, of course, it's not as active. Maybe they have a couple of launch complexes, you know, where Florida has had over the years probably 40, maybe 48 launch complexes. Big place down in Florida. I've been to Cape Canaveral and you know Kennedy, but of course I've never been close to Wallops Island as you have going into the airport. Back to you, Ed.
Have you ever heard of the wild ponies of Chincoteague and Assateague Islands, Virginia?
No, Ed, I haven't. What's that all about? Oh, by the way, this is WS2N.
WB2EAV. No, that is the only tourist attraction within about 50 miles minimum of Wallops Island. So a lot of people have heard of that. It's this thing where hundreds of years ago, some European settlers brought some ponies with them as, you know, beasts of burden, and some of them escaped, and they've managed to eke out an existence for hundreds of years on Assateague Island, which is a barrier reef like Jones Beach in that area, and every so often they cull a herd and you know, they'll kill horses, they capture them and sell them as, you know, basically pets. And that gets a lot of press.
That's pretty good. They became self-sustained on an island. Yeah, I guess probably if there was too many of them, you know, they wouldn't be able to survive. So I guess they have to do that, you know, get a hold of them and sell them. Maybe they can get a racehorse out of one of them. But very good. It sounds good. And but if it's a tourist, that means people are going there. Are they actually going to the island where the horses are?
No, what it is, to get out to Assateague Island, which, imagine Jones Beach without anything on it. Imagine Jones Beach before it was built up. But on the way, like when you take the Wantagh Parkway, imagine like an island in the middle of the bay, that's Chincoteague, which I think is where the settlers brought the horses originally. And that is an ongoing community. But the NASA Wallops Flight Center, as it was known then, I think they've changed the name, is right on the road to Chincoteague, such that the week, 1 week a year that they do the pony herding, you'll find all activity in that area stops because the roads are just too damn crowded.
Oh, I get it. Very good. It would be fun to be down there when there's one of the launches anyway. You could probably see that very clearly from that location. If you could actually see a launch from Long Island if you have a low enough horizon. You know, no more than you got to be within 15 degrees. The rocket, we got to around 15 degrees in elevation here, and then that would be it. That would be as high as it would go, because it would be going east and then over the horizon, and it would be gone. So you can do that. I did that once so far, but being down near that island, that would really look great. Well, okay. Very good, Ed. I'm going to run. Tomorrow's another day. Nice talking to you. Glad you're on the net as much as you are. And we'll catch you next week, if not during the week. Back to you, Ed. I forgot your call. I wrote it down somewhere. Back to you, Ed. WS-1, it's getting late.
All right, you want me, before we go, you want me to tell you why I've been on it more than I used to be?
Hey, I'd love to hear that. Either way, I'm glad you are. Back to you, Ed.
I never felt I could compete with K2RIW, but I felt that, you know, it was a pretty good Watson to his Sherlock Holmes, if you understand the metaphor. And then when Roy took it over, I felt that's great. I think Roy, with my help, can equal things. So I figure I try to help Roy. Hopefully I'm helping and not hurting him.
It's not like you're doing great to me. Very good. Yeah, well, yeah, Dick was, it was something else. Very good. You know, as much as, you know, I used to, of course, listen to every net, but there's no way I'm going to absorb everything that was in his head. You know, you just hope by listening, you know, through osmosis or something, you're going to absorb something. And that's pretty much what I did. So, yeah, big loss, but it was a big gain listening to him all those years.
Yes, we're all the better for what we got from it. So let's think and focus on that.
I concur. Okay, we'll catch you someday soon. Hopefully next week. And we'll be back. This is WS2N. We'll be clear with you. Back to you, Ed.
All right, before you go, let me tell you one of my favorite things. Dick used to be fascinated when I would tell him about the IFF antenna on the Navy E-2D aircraft that I was working on. He found that absolutely fascinating and used to pummel me with questions, and I loved every second of it.
Questions with that one topic. The same thing with the space program. You know, I'd say something about, oh, I don't know, the space station. I'll mention one module. Oh, where's that module? What's in front of it? How big is that? What's it made of? How thick is the wall? On and on and on. Back to you, Ed.
I think I was the one who asked how thick is the wall. Something didn't sound right.
I remember the wall topic many times. Oh, you were one of the people with the ball question. How thick is it? How many inches is it? What's it made of? Yes. Back to you, Ed.
No. I don't care what the wall thickness is, but something you said just hit me as something doesn't sound right, so I just asked to clarify.
I heard crackling noise. Something doesn't sound right, and then the radio went crackly on me.
Try that again. No, I don't really care what the wall thickness is, but the number you mentioned sounded out of the range of what I would consider to be a reasonable possibility. So I just questioned it for that reason. I said, that doesn't sound right. I don't know what it is. I don't care what it is, but this doesn't sound right.
Did I say 10 centimeters, which is, what, roughly 4 inches?
No, nothing like that, but it was something like half an inch. I mean, where I was expecting to hear something on the order of magnitude of a 16th of an inch.
Yeah, no, okay. It's a double wall system, I know that. And collectively it winds up 4 inches. But the, I don't know what the gauge is, the outer gauge, I don't remember. Probably 20 gauge or something.
Yeah, but that 4 inches is probably 98% hollow.
Yeah, that's right. You have mylar insulation in between that, and, they run some tubing and stuff in between that. You know, that's most of the, a lot of the infrastructure of the space station, the modules, they do run some stuff through the interior. And when it's, instead of being inside, they'll have it through the walls. Most of the stuff they ran outside. They learned that from the Mir space station and Salyut 6 and Salyut 7 that the Russians had. They ran a lot of stuff right through the inside of the Mir space station. It gave them a lot of problems and things, dangerous and things leaked. You've got ammonia lines, so they're all on the outside of the space station. Back to you, Ed.
No, I was just concerned because when you are launching a rocket, the actual metallic structure of the rocket, every gram of unnecessary weight uses up a tremendous amount of fuel to lift it. So they probably, measured to the nearest milligram to see how much weight they can save. And, the gauge, the thickness of the metal used is what I was concerned about. And the figure you gave me just sounded off because they're obsessive with saving weight. And that would be the exact opposite. That's all I was ever coming from. Nothing more.
Yeah. And then the new one that SpaceX is building, the Starship down in Texas, it's all out of stainless steel. And I was surprised to find out it's 5/32nds of an inch. Well, this is the booster, the booster and the Starship itself. But 5/32nds of an inch. That's a thick, But, when you add that up and you're going to go up almost 400 feet tall, that's a lot of weight. All stainless. Instead of, carbon. Instead of a carbon composite body, this thing's all made of stainless. But I found different locations, and somebody else I knew that also found it. It's 5/32nds of an inch. All right, so it's a booster, but the top part is the spaceship itself that will actually be in space in a vacuum. And eventually that same piece has to come back. It's all reusable. So that's really something else. That's really thick. When you talk about like the LEM that went to the moon, that's like paper thin. But this is actually 5/32nds. Back to you.
Yeah, 5/32nds is over an eighth of an inch. And I've dealt with eighth of an inch thick metal, and that is pretty serious metal. And I'm just surprised, that's all. All right, look, it's getting late. You have better things to do, maybe you want to sleep. I have better things to do, maybe you want to sleep. Maybe we should pull the plug on this.
I agree, but, all I have to do is hear more space topics, and that's what happens. I'll never leave. It's called that, and it's, 304L is the new stainless steel that he's using. It's supposed to be a better alloy. Wow. All right, we'll continue next week. Have a good night, and we'll say 73 WB2. Here it is, EAP to WS2N.
Always a pleasure, Paul. WS2N, WB2 EAV, clear.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5:00 a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Welcome to the WA3FFJ repeater.
Mark, if that's you, you're not holding a repeater.
Okay, how's that?
Yeah, you got it that time. Hey, good morning, Mark.
Yeah, you were real scratchy when you first came out. Are you in a bad spot?
Yeah, I was going through Darlington, between the buildings. Maybe that was it. But then all I kept hearing was the repeater ker-chunking. It's like you couldn't hold the repeater or something.
Not the best spot in the parking lot, but I could copy good. I guess we got a meeting Tuesday, right? Tomorrow?
Yeah, man, that was snuck up on me. Didn't even realize it until somebody said it on the net last night.
The net last night, I got called, a buddy in Florida called about 4:00 a.m. and we were like, blah, 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 blah. You know, I was like, and George sent me text, the echo link's off, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've got to disconnect the antenna. The other night, I was using the antenna, so I don't know. I got it back up running, but I guess by then the net was over.
Yeah, I actually checked in and out. I was in the middle of doing something and kind of listening to it in the background. So, as Alex brought it up, I was like, oh, shoot, that's right, we got a meeting. I would have forgot about it.
When I was coming to work, there was a construction road sign there. Starting 10:19, I was like, oh, you know what? That was like third week in a month.
Thank you.
is the WA3SFJ repeater. The time is 6 o'clock a.m. Monday, October 19. Good morning.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.